It was too close to look at each other without getting a headache, so we both closed our eyes. It only took a minute for my body temperature to roar. A drop of sweat rolled down the side of my face.
"Here,"
he said, and lifted off my thermal. The cami underneath went along with it. I probably would have been more self-conscious, except that I still had my thermal leggings and my bra on, and with the sleeping bag, he couldn't really see anything. In fact, I had yet to be completely undressed in front of Connor. His hands had touched nearly all of me, but his eyes hadn't seen a thing. Even though I was sticky from sweat, Connor didn't seem to mind. We kissed for a bit, and his hands ran lightly over my back.
"What do you do when you're not here with me?"
he asked.
"I sleep," I said with a smile. "No, I mean, seriously."
His questions made me anxious. I definitely didn't have a social life like Connor's. "Well, I'm usually with Autumn." My mind searched for other things to tell him, but I drew a blank, a pathetic blank.
"She's a nice girl. I've seen her out a few times lately. How come you don't go to parties with her?"
I rolled over and then back again, trying to get comfortable. "Of course she's a nice girl. Why wouldn't she be a nice girl?" I knew Autumn wanted to be more social, but I hadn't known she was completely back in the scene.
I didn't mean anything by it.
"Just so you know, the things that Chad Rivington said about her weren't true." I wrestled to get my arms out from underneath me. "And to answer your question, Autumn and I don't go to parties together because we're in a fight right now." I wanted to add, "That's why I come here to see you," but I didn't. It wasn't Connor who I was angry with. It was Autumn. And a little bit me, too.
"Over what?"
The sleeping bag had become a microwave. "Can you unzip this thing? I'm suffocating." Connor fumbled to get his arms across me. The zipper purled open, and it felt like coming up for a breath after a long underwater swim.
"Sorry, I didn't mean to."
"It's fine. I'm just better off if I don't really think about it."
"Okay. I'll change the subject. You doing anything this Friday?"
I narrowed my eyes. Was he joking?
"No.
The SATs are Saturday morning."
Connor shrugged.
"Wait," I said. "You're not taking them?"
"Nah."
"But what about college?"
"I'm not going to college."
Connor must have seen the surprise on my face because he started shaking his head like I had the wrong idea.
"Wait, that's not exactly true. I'm going to take a couple of business classes at the community college, but the family business is shifting over to me in the next year or two when my dad retires."
I said, "That's cool," though I doubt I sounded convinced. Taking over a business like the Hughes Christmas Tree Farm was impressive, but that would mean staying in Liberty River for the rest of your life, which to me seemed like the worst thing possible. I tried to think of a graceful way to change the subject when Connor started kissing me again. It was like neither of us wanted to admit how different we were, deep down. So we didn't. Instead, we slithered all over each other like two snakes in a bag. A while later, Connor got up to get me a bottle of water from a stash he'd set on a shelf. When he got back in the sleeping bag, his skin was icy. He rubbed next to me to get warm and said,
"I like hanging out with you."
He rolled on his back and stared up at the ceiling as if he could see stars, not a bunch of seed bags suspended in between the rafters. When I didn't say anything, Connor pulled me on top of him.
"Do you like coming here?"
"I wouldn't be here if I didn't," I said. It wasn't exactly a declaration of feelings, but it was all I could give him. Chapter 26. On the drive home that night, I decided it was time Autumn and I talked. I'd given her space, maybe too much, The trick was getting to her when Marcy wasn't around. Autumn must have felt the same way because on Friday after school, I found her outside the library, a pile of books in her hands, one knee perched up against the wall. I knew she was waiting to see me because for the first time since the Halloween dance, she actually made eye contact. I was no longer invisible, the ghost of a friend she used to have.
"Hey," she said. "Can we talk?"
I looked at my watch. The student council meeting would start in 5 minutes. As much as I wanted this to happen, there were too many students passing us on the way into the library, and I didn't want to feel rushed. We had a lot to discuss.
"Can this wait until after the meeting?" I asked. "I could drive you home, or we could go somewhere and get food."
My mind raced with the possibility. We'd grab dinner at our favorite diner, finally hash things out, and then head back to my house. I still had the Singing in the Rain DVD I'd spitefully watched with my mom after our fight. I'd pretend that I hadn't watched it, that I'd waited for her. She shook her head.
"This won't take long."
The floor went out beneath me. I couldn't believe her. She'd finally decided it was time for us to talk, and I was expected to drop everything. Now I definitely didn't want to get into it before the meeting started because I could already feel the tightness in my throat.
"I don't know what you suddenly need to tell me," I said. "You've made it clear that you don't want to be friends anymore."
I tried to keep my voice down, but it felt like I was screaming.
"I'm quitting student council."
Her hand went up to her mouth to bite her fingernail, but she quickly pulled it back down. I shook my head.
"What?
Why would you do something like that?
Do you honestly hate me that much? God, has Marcy completely brainwashed you against me?"
"This isn't about you, or Marcy, or anyone. I just don't want to be in student council anymore."
"What about all the committees you volunteered for? You're just going to walk out on your responsibilities?"
"It's not fair to everyone that I haven't been giving it my all."
She sounded like it was a pain to have to explain herself.
"And quit acting so shocked, Natalie. You knew I was never really into student council."
"Maybe not, but you always had good ideas, like asking Connor for the bonfire wood and holding our own girls' night. And it's not like student council was bad for you. How's it going to look on your college applications if you quit during senior year?"
I threw my hands up. "I really don't get this, Autumn. It's like you're having a midlife crisis or something. I don't want you to do something you're going to regret later on."
"I don't want regrets either. That's why I want to spend my senior year doing other things. I've missed out on a ton. I've got to make up for lost time before high school is over."
So 3 years of our friendship was lost time? Over Autumn's shoulder, I caught sight of someone poking her head around the corner, watching us. Marcy Cooperstein. It was the final straw.
"Wow," I said. "Okay, I never thought you'd be stupid enough to make such a terrible mistake again, but apparently I was wrong about you."
Autumn didn't back down.
"I'm not making a mistake, and don't you dare judge me."
I couldn't help but laugh.
"Judge you? I was the only one in this entire school who didn't judge you. You think it was easy for me to be your friend? To always have to protect you? It wasn't. It sucked, actually."
Autumn looked genuinely pissed now.
"Don't make it seem like you were some kind of saint. No one wanted to be friends with you. Nobody even liked you. You walked around this school with your nose stuck up in the air, so much smarter, so much better than everyone else. Without me, you wouldn't have had one single friend. No wonder you wanted me to feel so bad about myself. If I hadn't, we would have stopped being friends a long time ago."
"I am a good friend," I thought. "A good friend who didn't deserve to be treated this way."
Yes, I'd always been worried about Autumn leaving me, but I'd never made her feel bad about herself in order to make her stay. I turned to walk away because really I'd had enough, but then I spun back around. The words were hot in my mouth and I spit them like fireballs.
"You realize you're making a humongous fool out of yourself, don't you, fish sticks?"
I wanted Autumn to get mad as I felt. But instead of turning bright red, all the color drained from her face.
I never, ever thought you would say that to me,
she said. Black smoke bloomed inside me. I knew I should shut up. I wanted to suck the words back inside my mouth, but I couldn't. I couldn't stop.
But that's your name, right? That's what your friend Mike Domsky calls you.
I felt bad for Mike after what Spencer did to him. She humiliated him in front of everyone.
Are you kidding me? Mike made both of our lives miserable, and now you're sticking up for him? Come on, Autumn. Don't you have any self-respect?
I probably should have expected this from you. After all, you're the one who makes me feel the worst about myself. You constantly bring up the whole fish sticks thing. How I should tell other girls about it so they can learn from my mistakes. How I shouldn't be friends with anyone but you because other people laughed at me. Well, I'm tired of it.
She was releasing her own fire and smoke now.
So people said shitty things about me. You know what? I gave them too much power. I should have never let something so ridiculous affect me the way it did, especially when it wasn't even true.
Her words burned so bright I couldn't see. I couldn't say anything in my own defense. All I could do was cry. I half thought Autumn might reach out for me, or at least apologize when she saw how badly she was hurting me. After all, I'd held her through so many sobbing fits. I dried her tears 1,000 times, but she stayed on her side of the invisible divide and wiped her cheeks, which were slick with tears, too.
You've been a great friend to me, Natalie. I'm not saying you haven't, but I don't need you to protect me anymore. I don't need you making me feel bad or reminding me of something stupid I did 3 years ago. I'm moving on with my life, and you should too.
She said it like it would be easy, and maybe for her it was. But for me, crying alone in the hallway, it seemed utterly impossible. Chapter 27. I set myself on autopilot. Some unknown force took over my controls while I curled up in a ball deep in the back of myself. It dried my tears and pulled me together. It walked me into the library, sat me down at the head of the table, and led an entire student council meeting, filling 4 of my notebook pages with action items and project discussions and thoughts for next week's agenda. Then it drove home, ate the ziti my mom had cooked, and pushed me up the stairs to my room. I still couldn't believe that I'd called Autumn fish sticks. The words left a dirty taste in my mouth even now. Any chance we might have to patch things up, I had completely ruined. I ached to take it back, but I knew that I couldn't. My phone buzzed from the bottom of my book bag. I checked and saw who it was. But I couldn't answer. I couldn't go to him. Not tonight. The SATs were hours away, the most important test of my life. I couldn't screw that up, no matter what kind of shambles my life was in. I shook thoughts of Connor out of my head and stayed focused. I spent an hour reviewing my vocab lists, looked over my essay bullet points, and packed my bag with test-taking essentials. 2 protein bars, a bunch of my favorite mechanical pencils, a hair tie, and then I tried to sleep. Sleep would be good for me, but I tossed and turned for what seemed like hours. Sometime in the last 2 weeks, I'd become nocturnal. My body burned energy I didn't know I was even capable of storing up, even when I lay as still as I possibly could. All my organs and muscles churned like a locomotive. It was anxiety. It was apprehension. It was grief. I tried watching television. I tried reading a book. I tried taking a shower with the water as hot as I could stand. When I stepped out, I caught a blur of myself in the steamed-up mirror. I looked like a ghost and felt like one, too. Using my towel's edge, I wiped away the condensation. Almost instantly, negative things jumped out. I wished that I had bigger boobs. Mine were barely a handful. I turned sideways and stared at the dimpled skin on my upper thigh. The scars looked like I'd sat on gravel from where Grammy's dog had bitten me. I twisted to see the dirt-smudged birthmark on my hip and back again to see my outie belly button, which protruded so far off my stomach that it looked like a third nipple. I thought, is this the kind of stuff Connor would see if I let him look at me naked? I knew he liked my body in the dark. His hands were always moving, always touching. And he'd pressed against me so hard, like he was afraid I'd disappear if given the space to breathe. The light in my bathroom was harsh, and I felt I deserved that. I despised the girl staring back at me. This was the girl Autumn hated. This was the girl no one really liked. I couldn't stand looking at her. So I shut off the bathroom light and lit a candle that I kept by the sink. Everything got softer. The ripples on my thigh disappeared. I uncoiled the towel from my head and let my hair fall down onto my shoulders in cold clumps. I leaned forward, putting my hands on the sink edge. More shadows. More curves appeared. I didn't look like myself. I looked hungry, starved for affection, for someone who'd make me feel good about myself. I looked like I knew what I was doing when I very clearly did not, because I didn't understand how being with Connor could feel so right one moment and so pointless the next. Not that it mattered. I was living life in moments, in darkness, in that shed. I wrapped myself back up in the towel, blew out the candle, and tiptoed across the hall into my room. My phone was buzzing again. Connor, surely. Not Autumn. Never again, Autumn. I grabbed it, planning to text him back that I wasn't coming over tonight, because really, this whole thing was stupid and bound to blow up in my face. There was really no other way it could end. He wrote, "Please?" One word, and I was gone. Chapter 28. The idea of me showing up late to the SATs would have been laughable a few weeks before, along with the notion that Autumn and I would no longer be friends, or that I'd spent my nights in the woods. But that was my life. So maybe I shouldn't have been so shocked after all. I got to school with mere seconds to spare. Miss B, the proctor from my room, stood at the open classroom door, frowning down at her wristwatch. When she looked up and saw me racing down the hall as fast as my legs would carry me, her face was a blend of relief and disappointment. I'd seen her look angry before, but never straight on, only from the sides, the periphery aimed at someone else. I thought of about a million excuses in the span of a second, but when I opened my mouth, she shook her head and pointed inside. "No time, Natalie. We've got to get started." The last open seat in the classroom happened to be directly behind my now former best friend. If Autumn was at all concerned that I wouldn't have arrived on time, she didn't look it. As soon as I came into the room, she leaned over and started to root around in her bag, avoiding my eyes. It was a big slap in the face, considering Autumn probably wouldn't have taken a single SAT prep course if it hadn't been for me. I was practically her private tutor, passing on the knowledge I'd gotten from my summer course and all the manuals I'd read. Did she think about that? Did she remember how much I'd done to prepare her for today? I walked past her without crying or saying anything, but inside, I wondered if I could really do this for a whole year, if we could reinvent ourselves as strangers. Miss B handed out the test booklets. I stared at my future, a page full of empty circles. I'd worked way too hard for way too long to prepare for this day. I needed to push everything out of my head and get serious. This, ultimately, was my ticket to escape Liberty River. This life that I'd suddenly screwed up. Except when the test started, I ignored my booklet and stared at the back of Autumn's head, boring holes into her skull, trying to think about what could possibly be going on in her head. And the truth was, I felt tired. I'd been all over Connor last night, kissing him so hard I'd barely breathed. Plus, the heat was on high in the classroom, the dry and hissing heat that was perfect for naps. I don't remember falling asleep, just the earthquake that woke me. I looked up. Everyone in the room did. Miss B used my desk for balance. She had one high heel off, bending over slightly to examine her big toe. She'd bumped my desk leg so hard that my pencil had fallen off and rolled halfway across the classroom floor. I wiped away the wetness on my cheek, but there was nothing I could do about the translucent stain of drool right smack in the center of my test booklet. "Excuse me," Miss B announced, as if it had been an accident. The look she gave me before returning to the front of the room was one of unmistakable, purposeful disappointment. I recovered and finished as much of the test as I could, but I still felt like an absolute failure. Chapter 29. Somewhere in the middle of our makeout session that night, Connor stopped kissing me and started thinking, which was exactly what I had been trying to avoid. "What are you doing?" I asked when he pulled away mid-kiss.
"I can tell you're upset."
"No, I'm not."
"I'm not dumb, Sterling."
He rolled off me and onto his back.
"What's wrong?"
It was a straightforward question, but the answers in my brain were a knotted mess I didn't want to untangle. I flipped onto my stomach and pressed my face into the pillow. "Connor, please, I don't want to get into it right now."
"Then go ahead and change the subject, but I'm not messing around with you when you're like this."
"Why not? I thought guys like you were always good to go."
"It's making me feel gross."
I lifted my head and glared at him.
"Thanks a lot. You know what I mean."
"All right, fine. I've got a question for you." I smiled a very sweet, very fake smile. "Who did you vote for? For student council president?"
Connor suddenly looked uneasy. "Isn't that an invasion of voter privacy or something?"
"So it was, Mike." I tugged hard on the blanket to give me a little extra. Connor was a blanket hog. Figures.
"Mike's my friend. Of course I voted for him."
He said it like I should have known that already, like there was no possible way he would have voted for me. I turned away from him. I didn't know why it stung so much. Maybe because, deep down, I'd hoped that Connor secretly had voted for me, which was stupid. Connor curled his body against mine.
"I think you're doing a really good job as president, if that counts for something. I'd vote for you now."
I knew why. I knew all Connor's reasons. "It doesn't, but thanks anyway."
"Really? That doesn't make it better? Not even a little?"
I stared hard into the dark, mad at myself for bringing this up in the first place. "No, it makes it worse."
"Look, Sterling, I didn't know you then."
"I hate to break it to you, Connor, but you still don't." He let out a deep, exasperated sigh. I felt it against my back.
"You're not exactly an expert on me either. You still haven't come to any of my football games, even though I'd like it if you did."
"I despise football, not to mention all the guys on your team."
"I know you have your issues with my friends, especially Mike, and I can't blame you for that. When I saw how he screwed up your campaign poster, I got so pissed I took it down myself."
I blushed. "You did that?"
"Come on. I've got sisters, and if a guy ever wrote stuff like that about them, I'd lose my mind. Mike doesn't think sometimes. He doesn't have the best judgment."
Connor sat up.
"But I'm not Mike. You know that, right?"
"Maybe." I wanted to believe that Connor was smarter, sweeter than I'd originally thought. But I couldn't completely ignore the truth either. Connor had some very questionable friends, not to mention a long history of girls he'd fooled around with. I had to be careful, even if I didn't exactly want to be. Connor took the tip of my ponytail and drew a circle in the palm of his hand, as if it were a paintbrush.
I may not know you, but I'm trying. I want to figure you out.
My throat got tight. Maybe you shouldn't.
Why?
Because that's not what this is supposed to be. As soon as I said it, I worried what Connor would say. Would he confirm my deepest fears that our relationship was purely physical? Or would he tell me he had real feelings for me? Both prospects scared me. Luckily, Connor didn't say anything. Quite possibly because he was as confused as me. And in a strange way, that was comforting. I took advantage of his silence and stood up. I should probably go, I announced. I scanned the floor for my socks, tiptoeing through the darkness on a freezing cold floor. I heard him get up, and then I felt myself be spun around. Connor wrapped his arms around me tight. That's when I realized that we'd never officially hugged before. We touched so many different parts of each other, independent pieces that made up the whole of us, but never something so all-encompassing. Even though I felt the urge to push him away, I didn't. I just let Connor hold me. And I might have even held him back.
Chapter 30.
I notice you've been distracted. I shifted in my seat and stared at the pointed toes of Miss B's high heels. It was the Monday after the SATs, and if she'd wanted to fail me 1,000 times over, I probably would have agreed to it. I felt that guilty.
I know, I said. I'm sorry.
Natalie, I know you've been working hard, and you've got a lot on your plate, but your recent behavior concerns me. Thanksgiving is this week, and we're completely unprepared to assemble the food baskets. We need to begin making announcements for the students to bring food donations, to get in touch with the local shelter, to see how many families are... Clearly, I needed to cut back the time I spent with Connor, and the time I thought about him, because I was thinking about him far too much.
Natalie, are you even listening?
She put her teacup down on her desk so hard, a few drops of brown liquid sloshed past the lip.
Yes, of course.
Miss B narrowed her eyes. She was not amused.
I've already finished a draft of your college recommendation letter. Please don't compel me to revise it.
That caught me completely off guard. Would Miss B really do something like that? Was the good reputation I'd worked so hard to make for myself in jeopardy? I nodded, apologized profusely, grabbed my coat, and got out of there as quickly as possible. That's the thing with secrets. You can't explain yourself. The only thing you're left able to say is sorry. Again and again. I had just turned on my car when Spencer knocked on the window, her arms wrapped around herself. She wasn't wearing a coat, even though there were hardly any leaves left on the tree branches.
Hey, Natalie, do you think I could get a ride home? My mom got stuck at work, and the next bus won't come for at least an hour.
Sure, I said, and leaned over to click my passenger side door open. The gesture sparked a sad sensory memory. It felt like forever since I'd done that for someone.
Thanks.
Spencer settled into the seat and slammed the door. Her teeth were chattering, and she started rubbing her bare legs. I cranked up the heat and pointed all the vents at her.
I owe you big time,
she said. After Miss B's lecture, I wasn't really in the mood to talk. Luckily, Spencer was in a chatty mood, and she gossiped about a bunch of people in between giving me directions to her apartment building. I didn't have to say much. And then, peering at my neck, Spencer teased.
So, have you gotten any more bug bites lately?
It was weird. Instead of being defensive, I thought about telling Spencer everything. And I would have if it wasn't Connor I was kissing. First of all, Spencer had liked Connor. She wore his name on her prostitute shirt. I didn't think she still had feelings for him, but I wasn't positive. Plus, I didn't exactly trust Spencer's discretion. All she'd need to do was tell one person, and the secret would be out. I'd look like the biggest hypocrite in the world, which I guess I kind of was. But then I remembered what Autumn had said to me in the hallway. She'd moved on, made new friends. Why was I so intent on keeping Spencer at arm's length? She'd proven herself to me more than a few times, and whether I liked it or not, Spencer understood boys in a way that I didn't. All right, I am seeing someone, I said casually, and then quickly added, he's not from around here. If not for her seatbelt, Spencer might have popped straight out of her seat.
I knew it! Oh my God, tell me everything about him. Is he cute? I bet he is so cute.
I turned to her and smiled. So many adjectives filled my mouth, but I could see Spencer's apartment building looming ahead. I didn't want to drop her off. It felt so good to have a girlfriend. Why hadn't I done this weeks ago? So when I braked for a stop sign, I turned to her and asked, do you maybe want to go grab a bite to eat? My treat. Spencer grinned from ear to ear. She looked grateful, as if she were lucky to receive such an invitation from me. I drove us to what used to be Autumn and my favorite diner, which was an old-timey steel trailer with a handful of tables and a bright pink neon sign. The place was pretty empty since it was still a few hours before dinner time. Our waitress let us have our pick of seats, and Spencer opted for the last booth on the right. We had a view of the parking lot and our own push-button jukebox stocked with oldies. Spencer dug for quarters to give us a soundtrack. We each ordered a Coke and a crock of onion soup baked over with a bubbling cheese canopy, and we shared a plate of perfectly crisp fries drowning in gravy. I was so incredibly happy. Spencer gladly let me yammer on and on about a slightly altered version of Connor. I kept lots of details the same. How handsome he was. How he was attracted to the fact that I was such a smart and strong girl. The only thing I changed were the details on how we'd met. My new boyfriend had been my tutor in an SAT prep class. A brilliant college freshman.
So, what's the issue? Spencer asked. He sounds great.
Hearing her say that made my heart hurt. Connor and I were so close to perfect, but still so far. Or just very different people, I said.
And?
And nothing. I don't see us having a future. We're like wasting each other's time. Spencer's face wrinkled.
What do you mean future? You're not going to be one of those girls who gets married at 18, are you?
What? I said, grabbing another napkin. No, of course not.
Well, then what kind of future are you talking about?
I thought of our cold little shed. He's transferring to another college after Christmas, and I don't want to get attached. Spencer dabbed her fry into a pool of ketchup.
You won't get attached, she said, matter-of-factly.
I won't?
No, because you already know you can't. It's mind over matter, Natalie. You can't get attached, so don't get attached. It's as easy as that.
Oh.
Get what you can out of it. I mean, if spending time with them makes you happy, do it. Don't overthink things. Remember, you've got the power. He wants to be with you. You're the one in charge.
Somehow I managed to nod. Spencer clearly had her sexuality in check. She could turn it off or on, depending on what or who she wanted. But I was the complete opposite. I didn't feel like the one in charge, though it wasn't like Connor was in charge either. The recklessness was leading both of us.
Don't get quiet on me now, Natalie. I want details.
Like what?
You know.
Spencer wiggled her pinky at me. What does that mean?
Haven't you seen all the girls do it in the hallway?
She wiggled her pinky again, but I was still clueless.
I invented a hand gesture for Mike Domsky. It means teeny peeny, and it's caught on like wildfire.
I winced. Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. I've always had my suspicions, and my movie theater prank proved I was right. It's sad, but it makes total sense if you think about it. I mean, Mike drives the biggest SUV in the school parking lot.
She laughed a little and then pointed to her lap.
So, your guy is all good down there?
I fidgeted in my seat. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's normal, I guess.
Well, is he good in bed?
What? Spencer pursed her lips.
Don't be coy with me. I'm not a little kid anymore.
Spencer, I'm not sleeping with him. She stared me down as if I were lying. I'm a virgin. And then I looked around for our waitress. After all, we weren't even eating anymore, just talking. Spencer looked confused.
Like a total sex virgin or a straight-up intercourse virgin? Because I haven't had complete sex with anyone before either, though I've done lots of other stuff.
I grabbed my soda glass. It was empty, but I still sucked down a big gulp of melted ice because I didn't want to talk about this anymore. Because I was picturing Spencer in her prostitute shirt and then in her Halloween costume and whatever she had to do to convince Mike Domsky to whip it out in a movie theater. I didn't want to be that kind of girl. I switched the subject to student council and how much pressure I was under with the Thanksgiving food baskets. The stress gripped me tighter. Spencer listened to every word as intently as the sex stuff, which was somewhat of a relief. After we finished our food, I drove Spencer back home.
I'm here for you, Natalie,
she said as I pulled up in front of her building.
If you need extra help with the baskets or if you just want to talk, let me know.
I said thanks, only because I would need her help with the baskets. But Spencer and I weren't going to have another conversation like this again. Part of me thought Spencer was a smart girl. The other part of me thought she was a 14-year-old prostitute who knew even less than I did. Chapter 31. That night, we were only a few feet away from the shed before I pivoted and started walking in the opposite direction. I didn't know why. It wasn't like I had all the time in the world. My parents had got to bed late, which kept me from sneaking out at a respectable hour. And I couldn't stay long, not with the huge trig test the next morning that I'd hardly studied for. I needed a decent night's sleep. I'd told Connor exactly that on the phone. I had maybe an hour, tops. It might not even be worth it. He'd said to come anyway. So I did. And even though he knew tonight would be rushed, Connor didn't say anything about it, about me not going right to the shed. The first time I came to the farm at night, everything seemed pretty spooky. The darkness, strange noises from the woods. But I felt comfortable here now. I walked around like it was daytime. My eyes took almost no time to adjust to the night once my headlights clicked off. The gift shop sat a few feet in front of me, so I headed that way. I'd always wanted a closer look at it.
Mom had it built 2 years ago. She thought we could sell souvenirs. In fact, it was her idea that we open the farm year-round, instead of just a Christmas. She's got a real business mind.
Connor slouched against a porch post.
You'd like her, he added.
Hearing that made me happy, but only for a second, because I wasn't sure Mrs. Hughes would like me back. Not if she knew how many nights I'd sneaked onto her property to fool around with her son while she and her husband were sleeping. No mother in her right mind would like that kind of girl. That was the worst part of it all, really. Knowing better, but doing it anyway, no matter how deeply it went against the kind of person I was. I cupped my hands around my eyes to peer through a window at a stack of shelves. Mason jars sat in perfect rows. Handwritten labels proclaimed strawberry jam, apple butter and pumpkin pie filling and charming, perfect penmanship. Each one had a scrap of fabric tied over the lid with a piece of twine, red gingham, like summertime picnic tablecloths.
She makes everything herself, with fresh ingredients from her garden. Some fancy bakery in the city even started selling her stuff.
Connor leaned into me from behind, his body blocking me from the night chill. He rested his chin on my shoulder and looked inside, too. Together, our breath fogged the glass.
You wouldn't believe what some people are willing to pay for this stuff.
My mind flashed with an idea. A big one. I spun around and faced him.
Connor, you know what? Your family should donate something from my Thanksgiving baskets. We'd only need, like, 20 jars, possibly 30 if you can spare them, by Wednesday.
Connor started kissing my neck, and I closed my eyes and breathed. He'd shaved just before I got there. I knew because his cheeks were unbelievably smooth. That, and from the smell of his aftershave, woodsy and spicy and warm. After a few kisses, I ducked out from underneath him. I couldn't let myself get sidetracked. I'd been slacking off on the Thanksgiving baskets. I'd been slacking off on everything.
Seriously, Connor, are you listening to me?
I'm seriously distracted,
he said, coming closer. My hands went right to my hips.
There are a lot of families in Liberty River who have nothing. They can't afford a Thanksgiving turkey, never mind all these fancy jellies. Don't you think you should give something back to people less fortunate than you? Isn't that only right?
He nudged his chin in the direction of the shed.
Come on, Sterling, it's freezing.
I didn't move, and I didn't feel cold. I was starting to boil.
You know, it would be nice if you helped me out. Honestly, it's the least you could do.
He pulled the hood of his jacket up over his head.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, let's see, I said, sarcastic.
You're not the one driving across town almost every night. You just roll out of bed and find me here, waiting.
Your grades aren't suffering. You don't have to worry about falling asleep in your classes.
Just hearing myself say these things out loud made me even madder. Connor looked at me blankly, like none of this had occurred to him before. I pointed at him.
You don't have to do any of the work or put in any effort to get something out of this arrangement.
Connor rubbed his hands together. The tips of his fingers were turning red with cold.
Are you saying you want me to sneak over to your place?
No, Connor. That was the last thing I wanted. To be with him someplace where we could actually get caught.
Connor didn't think about those things. He didn't have to.
It's different for you. You don't have to worry about college, keeping up your grades. I'm really stressed out by this food drive. Stuff like that doesn't magically come together. It takes hard work, effort, time, and I need people to help me.
I knew I sounded annoyed with him, but why couldn't Connor just agree to get me some of this stuff for my baskets? Didn't he want to help me?
He shook his head, wounded.
So, basically, I should give you a bunch of jellies because you come over here to fool around with me? Like payment?
What? No, that's not what I'm saying.
Even though maybe it was, all my muscles wound up tight from my toes up to my jaw.
And I really don't appreciate you insinuating as much. I'm not some slut from school. You can't buy me off with jelly.
Maybe you should go home,
he said, drawing curved lines in the gravel with the toe of his running sneaker.
Call me crazy, but I don't see us having much fun tonight.
I wanted to smack him.
Huh. That's funny, because about an hour ago, I said I shouldn't come over, but you talked me into it.
I didn't talk you into anything, Sterling. That's a skill I definitely don't have.
Oh? What's that supposed to mean?
I asked, and then I thought better of it.
You know what? Forget it. I'm leaving.
I said it proud, like I didn't care. Pure, raw spite. But as soon as I started walking back to my car, I felt sick. Connor let me go. He was going to let me drive away. He wasn't going to try to stop me. I wanted to turn around. I wanted to apologize. but I was too proud to do it. I was fumbling for my keys when I heard him come up behind me.
I'm sorry,
he said.
I'm really stressed out, too. We've got playoffs this Wednesday, and our practices have sucked.
He exhaled deeply.
It's not fight.
Yeah, well, it's a little late for that, huh?
I felt silly and desperate and immature. So much it made my palms sweat. I switched gears fast to save face, to hide the fact that I expected Connor to care about me and my student council troubles.
I wasn't trying to take advantage of you, by the way. I figured it would be good publicity for your family. The local paper is sending a photographer over to take pictures as we put the baskets together. I'd make it so the jars were prominently featured and that your family got a special mention in the article.
I waited for Connor to say something, but he stayed quiet, achingly quiet. And then, before I knew what I was doing, I turned to face him and threaded my thumb through his belt loop. I suddenly wanted him to want me so bad that he'd do anything I said, give me anything I asked for. I wanted to have that power over Connor Hughes.
I'll talk to my mom, okay? I can't promise anything because, like I said, it's expensive stuff, but I'll ask.
I tried to say thank you, but my throat got tight. Connor took my hand, the one holding on to his pants, and tucked it in the warm pocket of his jacket.
It's getting late,
he said. I barely managed to nod, but we both walked toward the shed anyway. Our sneakers crunched the gravel in sync until we were stepping on fallen pine needles, and then I couldn't hear anything at all. Chapter 32. Way too soon, it was time to put the Thanksgiving food baskets together. It should have been easy, except I seemed to be the only one taking it seriously.
Fire in the hole!
Ricky, one of the freshman reps, called through cupped hands, before launching a paper snowball in a high arc. Another freshman rep, Phil, shouted,
That's what she said.
The boys squished together on a single mahogany library chair, cackled like hyenas, greasy faces, beaming mischievous smiles. They tore out two more notebook sheets and wadded them up into fresh ammo.
Guys!
I darted across the library, ducking my head.
Stop!
While I'd been preoccupied getting the baskets prepped, Ricky and Phil had constructed a fort out of cranberry sauce cans, creamed corn cans, spinach cans. Nearly all the student donations had been stacked in pillars on top of their library table. They popped up over their tin wall every few seconds to launch attacks on a table of vulnerable boys across the library, who wildly swatted away the bombs with fat textbooks. Sure, it was right before a holiday, and everyone was excited to have a couple of days off from school, but somehow I'd lost control of student council. I thought back to my first meeting, and now I was so clearly the leader, how no one would dare speak unless I called on them first, how everyone respected me, even feared me. It was the absolute opposite these days. Miss B emerged from the office, annoyed at the ruckus. She walked straight over to me.
Natalie, a moment, please.
Yes, Miss B?
I sounded a little annoyed, probably because I knew she was going to lay into me again.
And yet again, I felt I deserved it.
Things seem to be devolving here. Do you have a plan for this afternoon, or are you flying by the seat of your pants?
Half her mouth wrinkled up.
I'm trying to...
Just then, Dave ran up and said,
Should I get everyone to start divvying up the food?
Yes,
Miss B and I said at the same time. She glanced around the room, and I tried to keep my eyes up with hers. It was a disappointing sight.
Is this all we have?
She asked.
It will be enough,
I said, even though I knew it wouldn't be. We needed to make 20 baskets, and there was barely enough food for 10.
But what could I do? I'd tried my hardest to remind kids to bring in cans. I basically had to threaten the town grocery store into donating free turkeys. I was so happy when I convinced the bakery to give us loaves of bread, but I could tell when I picked them up this morning that they were already stale. Thanksgiving was tomorrow. They'd be rock hard by then. I had wanted to give people a really nice Thanksgiving, a memorable one. I wanted my baskets to be something special and beautiful, like you'd see in one of those fancy home magazines. If this were the stuff that made up my Thanksgiving meal, I wouldn't feel much like celebrating. I'd probably kill myself.
"Doesn't this look great, everyone?"
Spencer called out to the room, though her eyes were on Miss B. She sat by herself at a nearby table, cutting big pieces of red gingham to line the willow tree baskets.
"The fabric really dresses everything up. It was Natalie's idea."
While I appreciated what Spencer was trying to do, I felt stupid for spending money on the baskets and the fabric, especially when I could have bought more food for the families.
"Go ahead, Natalie," Miss B said flatly. "Don't let me hold you up any further."
I sat down next to Spencer, and, in the best possible penmanship I could muster, tried to write "Happy Thanksgiving" on little leaf-shaped paper tags, but my handwriting sucked. If Autumn had been there, she'd have been able to do it much better. She'd done most of my campaign signs. My pen started to sputter, and I looked up to ask for another. That's when a balled-up piece of paper hit me square in the face. A gasp told me it was an accident, and then the whole room quietly laughed, which made me want to kill whoever had thrown it. I glanced at the boys and decided the offender in question was Phil, because out of everyone, his face was the reddest.
"Seriously, Phil, you're such a boner,"
Spencer shouted.
"Spencer,"
I hissed. Miss B was just across the room.
"Shh."
Phil jabbed his finger through the air.
"It wasn't me. Ricky did it."
Ricky rushed the table.
"Liar! Don't get me in trouble."
Ricky tried to wrestle Phil out from behind his fort, only to clip one of the towers. In the most incredible rumble, the cans came crashing down on the floor.
"Oh my God!"
I shouted, wading through the sea of metal. Cans were all over the place, labels ripped, some dented. A box of instant potatoes had broken open, spilling white flakes all over the floor. I sank to my knees, picked up two fistfuls, and let it pour through my hands like sand.
"Boys!"
Miss B raced back over toward me.
"Natalie, I need you to lead here."
"Excuse me, miss?"
I glanced up from the floor. A young man with a camera around his neck looked down at me.
"I'm here to take some pictures for the paper. Should I, come back later?"
I bit my lip and held back tears as I got to my feet. That's when Connor appeared in the doorway in a grass-stained football uniform that looked as if it hadn't been washed a single time this season, carrying an enormous cardboard box.
"Where should this go?"
he called out to no one in particular. Spencer came up next to me and squeezed my arm, reminding me to speak.
Anywhere,
I said casually.
"Anywhere is fine."
5 other uniformed JV players appeared behind Connor, also carrying boxes.
"What's in there?"
the reporter asked, snapping a picture. Miss B craned her neck from across the library. Connor set his box down on a table and lifted the flaps.
"I've got jellies and pie filling and fresh vegetables from our farm,"
Connor explained, and it was true. Oversized squash, zucchinis, carrots in bunches with long, ferny stems. My cheeks burned. The boxes were absolutely stocked full. I wanted to cry again, but this time out of relief.
"You didn't have to do all this,"
I whispered when I got near enough. It took a lot of self-control to keep from throwing my arms around Connor and covering him with kisses.
"I know,"
Connor whispered back. He was grinning like a cat and handed me a stack of green envelopes.
"What's this?" "Coupons for free Christmas trees. I thought you could tuck them inside the baskets. If it doesn't go with the whole Thanksgiving thing, that's cool.
or I don't know if some people are Jewish or whatever. You don't have to use them.
Connor, this is too much. As thrilled as I was, I felt sick with guilt. After all, I'd practically forced him to do this for me. Connor's family made a lot of money off this stuff. There was at least several hundred dollars worth of merchandise here.
I told my mom about your project and she wanted to help. Also, he whispered, they're not for the expensive trees, just the $20 spruces we sell to people who live in apartments. Only about this big.
He put his hand at my nose, playful and sweet. Before I even knew what I was doing, I reached out to hug him, but I stopped because Miss B was watching me. Us. My arms dropped. A flash of worry crossed his face, but he smiled through it.
I wanted to make sure you were getting something out of our arrangement.
He was joking, but I couldn't bring myself to laugh.
I wanted to help you.
A football player came up behind him.
Shouldn't we get back to the locker room before Coach Fallon makes us run extra laps?
Sure, go on,
Connor said. Then, as the younger boys took off, Connor leaned in close to me. I thought maybe he wanted a kiss, but instead he asked,
will you come to the game? It's the championship tonight. Please?
I looked over his shoulder. Even though the rest of the student council kids were all busy unloading the boxes, I was sure they were noticing. I knew that Spencer was looking. She hadn't taken her eyes off Connor since he'd walked in. I took a big step back and started adjusting things on the table, keeping my distance. Thanks so much, I said. We really appreciate your help. It came out stiff and formal. Connor looked hurt for a second, or maybe just confused. Then he turned and walked out. I didn't have time to feel bad. Miss B came over. This stuff is wonderful, she admitted, but then she looked at me, kind of unforgiving. That boy just saved you. She wasn't happy about it. She had wanted me to save myself. After the baskets were finished, I walked over to the football game. It was already dark and the floodlights lit up our field. The stands were full even though it was absolutely freezing outside. I knew Autumn was there. I'd seen her cuddled up under a blanket with other girls on my way over to the chain-link fence that ran the edge of the parking lot. I had my peacoat buttoned up, and I pulled my arms inside for extra warmth. My scarf was wrapped around my face, leaving just my eyes exposed. I couldn't feel my toes. I wanted to stay for the whole game for Connor, but it was freaking freezing. Plus, we were losing. By a lot. It was too far away to really see anyone, but since Connor was the QB, I could pick him out. It seemed like, with every single play, he'd get tackled. The ground was frozen, hard, and unforgiving. Each time I winced.
I didn't think you liked football.
I turned to find Spencer holding two steaming cups of apple cider. I took one and said, I don't.
I'd watch competitive chess if that's what Connor Hughes wanted to play.
I kept my eyes on the field. There was no denying what Spencer had seen in the library today.
Please don't tell anyone.
Of course I won't.
The wind picked up, and Spencer pulled her furry jacket hood over her curls.
Why didn't you tell me that night at the diner?
There were so many reasons, so I picked one at random.
I thought you liked him.
She laughed.
Natalie, please. I like everyone. I am very good at crushing. But seriously, what Connor did today was no joke.
She jabbed her finger into my chest.
And you barely thanked him.
Anger flicked up inside me.
What did you expect me to do, Spencer? Passionately kiss him? Offer him a gratis hand job? If I'd treated Connor differently than any other student who donated food, people would start to talk. And when people start talking, they don't stop.
Trust me, Miss B already suspects something. I know it. Spencer looked at me like I was crazy.
Don't be paranoid, Natalie. Nobody knows anything. And all I'm saying is that you should do something nice for him.
Do you not see me standing here, bored out of my mind and nearly freezing to death?
Spencer laughed.
I hate to break it to you, but there's no way in hell Connor knows that you're here. You're not cheering for him. You're nowhere near our bleachers. You're practically standing in the parking lot.
I looked through a hole in the chain link like it was a telescope.
Connor knows, I said. He knows I'm here.
Spencer didn't look convinced, and the more I thought about it, the less convinced I was, too. The only thing I felt sure of was that the cold wind suddenly felt much colder.
Chapter 33. That night, Connor waited for me outside, blowing puffs of white out of his nose like little empty thought balloons. I got out and we started walking to the shed. It was the coldest night yet. Frozen mud crunched underneath my feet.
That was some battle, huh? Funny that the one game you do show up at, we lose. I don't normally look that shitty out there.
He sighed.
I can't believe the season's over. I'm never going to play football again.
I grabbed my mitted hand around his and pulled him to a stop. Connor turned to face me. I looked at his house in the distance.
Are you sure we won't get caught?
I was nervous, but smiling in spite of it, mainly because I couldn't wait to see Connor's reaction. He did not disappoint. His mouth dropped open the tiniest bit.
Seriously?
It's really cold, I said with a laugh, and it was. I wiped at my nose. He gave my hand a squeeze.
Just stay close to me.
We sneaked up to the side of the house and entered through a back door into a pantry stocked with bags of rice, pastas, and glass jars filled with bright and bloated vegetables suspended in a yellowish water. We passed his kitchen and slipped through a dining room with a big oak farm table with chipped white paint and an iron chandelier with tiny linen lampshades. The whole house smelled spicy and sweet, like a pumpkin pie with extra nutmeg and clove. I felt exactly like I had that first night, giddy, nervous, excited, scared, all in a jumble. When we reached the big staircase in the foyer, we stopped. Connor pointed down a hallway.
My parents' room,
he whispered, and then he motioned for me to climb on his back.
What?
This I had not expected.
The stairs are old and creaky. There should only be one set of footsteps.
He crouched down. I climbed as gracefully as I could up his spine, which wasn't very graceful at all. You never think about how heavy you are until someone tries to pick you up. I felt like a sack of potatoes. Connor sucked in a sharp breath.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I just got knocked around pretty bad today.
Connor put his arms behind his back and linked them underneath my butt for extra stability. It helped, and despite his injuries, Connor's strength surprised me. His steps sounded light and not at all lumbering as we creaked our way up to the second floor. I rested my cheek against his flannel shirt and looked at all the family photos hanging on the wall. With each step up, Connor aged. He was a bright-eyed baby with so much brown hair it almost looked like a toupee. Then, Connor as a frowning kid, maybe 7, in a dress and covered with makeup, surrounded by 4 older girls who looked extremely entertained.
Looks like your sisters were a couple of bullies, I whispered in his ear.
Oh, yeah. They forced me to be their Barbie doll for years.
Then Connor got older, probably junior high, with the rope of an old sled over his shoulder, pulling 2 of his sisters, who were beautiful, through the snow, followed by Connor wearing an apron, helping his mom in the kitchen. Finally, there was recent Connor, the Connor who I clung to, standing next to his dad, each with an axe slung over his shoulder. It felt like a time warp, catching up to this moment in fast motion. I was learning about Connor in a way I never had. I wanted to go slower. I wanted to linger on every picture. When we reached the top of the stairs, I climbed down from his back. Braided rugs covered the wood floors.
"My parents can't hear us now,"
he said with such conviction that I couldn't help but think of the other girls he'd brought to his room. Others he'd carried up the stairs, though I tried to push them out of my head.
"Carly and Corinne are home for Thanksgiving. I think they both went out with their old high school friends, but we should be quiet just in case."
When Connor put his hand on his doorknob, I realized that I hadn't thought much about what his room might look like. I made a quick guess of typical messy boyness, clothes on the floor, a pile of sports magazines, maybe a poster of a race car or a busty woman holding two frothy beer steins. But Connor's room wasn't like that at all. It was clean, not just neat, but spotless. His mirror was streak-free. The beige carpet was vacuumed. His bookshelf had no books, but trophies of varying heights. They sparkled, free of dust. It smelled fresh, like laundry just out of a dryer, even though all his clothes were put away. I took off my coat and hung it on the back of his desk chair. There was a stack of papers in a pile. Spreadsheets crowded with numbers and figures, thicker than my AP Calc textbook.
"What are these?"
I asked.
"Business plans, budgets, projections for next year."
Connor sat down on his bed. I sat next to him.
"I can't believe you're here,"
he said. "Why? You've had plenty of girls in here before." I regretted saying it because I didn't want to think about Connor with other girls because of the way Connor had gotten mad at me for bringing up how he'd lost his virginity. This time, though, he wasn't angry. He looked at me deeply and said,
"Never a girl like you."
And it didn't sound corny, and it didn't sound like a line or a lie or any of the things I would have assumed when we first got together. Things were different now. I was different, ready to accept Connor for who he really was, a good guy who wouldn't do anything to hurt me. The realization that I implicitly, unconditionally trusted him overwhelmed me with warmth. Connor reached to turn his lamp off, but I guided his arm away. I wasn't scared of the light, of what Connor was about to see. I didn't want to hide anymore. He looked up at me with wide, almost disbelieving eyes as I lifted off my t-shirt and shimmied out of my pants. I unhooked my bra and slid down my underwear. I could tell Connor saw me the way I wanted to be seen. As beautiful. As strong. I expected to be nervous, but I felt confident in a way I never had in the shed. The moment was so different than what I'd imagined. There was no fear. No embarrassment. It was pure liberation. I took Connor's clothes off, too. His body was bruised, wounded, fragile.